Oh, gee, oh. All righty, it's about that time. I call the regular meeting of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Now we'll adopt the agenda for the meeting. Are there any recommended changes or other updates?
There is one note on your green agenda. We added a unfinished business item that was to do about the pay plan inclusion policy. We were just following up from the last meeting for you. So it's on. It's listed on that under unfinished business. Oh, it's not on here?
Big negative.
Oh, sorry.
Wrote it on here.
Yeah. Not printed, but it's correct.
Wait, mark it on here.
But it was pay plan inclusion policy under unfinished
pay
business.
Pay plan. Yeah. All righty. Do I have a motion to adopt the agenda as written?
So made.
Second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 3-0-2. I'm sorry, I'm still writing. Okay, if I try to multitask, I get lost. All right. Mr. Nichols.
Nothing.
That's great. That's the best report you've had in a while, partner. I did not make it down to our neck of the woods. I will make it down there tomorrow sometime.
Didn't start today. There was a glitch of some kind on the mitigation, and so they think the email I got said it looks like maybe Monday.
Maybe Monday? Okay. I'm starting with a new group.
I don't know what the glitch was. I'm waiting for Kevin to let me know what the scoop was.
Okay. All righty.
It's called the demolition. Sorry for
okay.
We're at the CARE Task Force Monday night. The demolition was going to start today, but probably will be not until Monday night.
It was scheduled. It's in the works.
So you were going to watch it, huh?
I just wanted to make sure it was happening. I'll hold off with making sure it's happening. All righty. We will now open the first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board this time? Hey. Seeing no takers, I will now close the first round of public comments. We will now move on to our public hearings. P, Fluvanna County Code Amendment, Garbage, Refuge, and Waste. Mr. Newman. I think I just butchered saying that, but it's not the first thing I butchered. I got Newman right. I was all over that. What was that show? Kramer.
Seinfeld,
yes.
Good evening. This is a county code amendment in regards to waste and construction debris. We currently have no language in our county code that requires that there be containers on construction or demolition sites. This can lead to the spread of debris from a construction site, to pose a hazard to our citizens, and I know that our code compliance officer has received complaints about this, and I believe some members of the board have as well. The language that we have tonight is prepared by Mr. Payne's office. It's here on the screen and in your packet. And it requires that a contractor or the owner or agent in charge of the permit provide a litter receptacle and that this litter be contained on a daily basis.
Any questions or comments from the board?
No.
Mr. O'Brien, you haven't missed much. You timed it just right. You got here just for the time for the public hearings.
There you go. Yep.
All righty. We have none. I'll call the applicant to the podium, which is already here. No questions? All right, I will now open the first round or the public comment, public hearing. Todd, please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the boards. Anyone wish to speak to this at this time? I will close the public hearing. Are there any questions from the board?
No, but I'd like to make.
I'm getting ready to say, Ms. Eager, do you want to make this?
I'll make the motion.
Make this motion, yes.
You should all know that there's an enormous dumpster in front of my house right now, filled with farm debris. So Okay, I move that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors approve an ordinance to amend Fluvanna County Code, Chapter 10, Article 1, by the addition of a new section 10-1-3.3 concerning the furnishing of receptacles for the prevention of accumulation of litter at certain construction sites.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. We will now go with Q. Fluvanna County Code Amendment, Water and Sewage Disposal. Mr. Newman.
There is no language within our county code that requires that toilet facilities be provided at construction sites. Uncontaining the waste poses a serious health hazard to not only the people of the county, but also to the waterways and wildlife. And again, our code officer has received complaints about things like this happening, and I believe some members of the board have as well. So this language requires that an acceptable sanitary toilet facility be provided within 500 feet of a construction site. This could include if your house, if somebody's doing work on your home, then the restroom in your home counts. Or you could provide a port-a-john or something like that to a site where you're doing new construction.
All righty, are there any questions from your board?
No.
All righty. Thank you, Mr. Newman. I will now open the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is anyone wishing to speak to this matter at this time? Seeing none, I will now close the public hearing. Are any comments from your board? I can't believe we all contained ourselves, didn't have something goofy to say. Mr. Nichols and I were quiet. Who would like to make this motion?
That was a trashy comment, but...
it would be watered down.
Yeah.
I move that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors approve an ordinance to amend Fluvanna County Code, Chapter 21, Article 1, by the addition of a new section 21-1-1A, concerning the provision of approved disposal methods of human waste at sites of building construction.
Second. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. We'll now move to the action matters. Our FY18 Energy Project Debt Service Budget, Mr. Dahl.
One note, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dahl's got all of these, and including down to K. So I'll have him do this, his all sequence, and then we'll install it right after that. That way you can just keep going right.
So the Farm Heritage one, I'm just going to go by and.
Right. We'll just do that right after he gets down to all of them.
All right, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So this is an energy project debt service budget, and it's just kind of correcting the debt service budget. So for the fiscal year 18 budget, when we were calculating and when we put in the numbers for the budget, those numbers were based upon a calendar year schedule, debt service schedule versus a fiscal year debt service schedule. So right here, the top line shows what was budgeted, 236, 126 interest. Virginia saves, that's their admin fee. And then we get a federal interest rate subsidy as well. So the net debt service was going to be $273,677. What the budget should have been, it should have been $236 because we make a principal and interest payment in October and then we make an interest payment in April. Well, we didn't budget for the interest payment of $143,000. But in addition to that, on that $143,000, we also receive a federal interest rate subsidy, so we get money also. So the shortage was really $42,602 for the fiscal year budget. This $143,000, it's going to be washed away by the $110,000 that we're getting by the federal interest rate subsidy. So we're requesting that the $42,602 be transferred from personnel contingency. It's not necessarily personnel contingency, but there's money left in the fiscal year 18 budget. So we're not asking for any additional fiscal year 18 dollars out of fund balance or anything like that.
And that's why it's out of a personnel contingency.
That's why it's out of personnel contingency. In the board contingency, I think there's about 28 or 30,000, and we could have pulled some out of here and some out of there, but just to keep it clean, we just pulled it out of personnel contingency since we haven't had to dip into it a lot this fiscal year.
That money would normally just go back to fund balance,
right.
And then we would ask for it for fund balance.
Sure.
It's all in the same fiscal year.
So motion number one is just recognizing that we're getting the $110,000 in the federal interest rate subsidy, so that increases the revenue and expenditures for that. And then motion number two, as I showed you going back, we were short the 42,602, and that's coming from personnel contingency budget.
All righty. Any questions from the board?
Yeah. How is our energy budget coming along? I know Mr. Winkler has had concerns about it. How are we doing?
So at this point, we don't. I'm sure they'll come back and they'll talk to us, and I would have to do with Mr. Stevens, see how it's doing. Technically, I think it was right around April, because of the contract, we had to push it back maybe about a month or so. So our audit period really doesn't start until it was about April. I think the end of April is when it's going to start. So from April until April next year is when we're going to be really going through and going through the audit of that. And then at the end of April in fiscal year 19 is when Train and their individuals are going to go through and do the official end of the year audit to see where everything ended up with.
Thank you.
So that's when we'll decide if they need to.
At that point, they'll go through all the expenditures and see if they met all their projected savings.
Yeah, there's something else here in the packet later on that I'll bring up concerning the energy, but not now.
All righty, any other questions? Do I have a motion for number one?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $110,574 for the FY18 Energy Project Debt Service Budget for funds received for the VRA QECB interest rate subsidy.
Got a motion made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Motion number two.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $42,602 from the FY18 contingency budget to the FY18 debt service budget.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. We'll now go forward with S, renewal of volunteer fire rescue workers' compensation insurance and accident sickness insurance coverages, Mr. Dahl.
Okay, so we've been working with the Volunteer Fire and Rescue Association and all agencies to try and get more consolidated insurance plans for them. Right now, the county pays for accident sickness policies for them, as well as all their workers' compensation policies. So first what we're going to do is we're going to talk about workers' compensation policies. As it stands right now, Flavanna Fire, Flavanna Rescue, Lake Monticello, they all have their own separate workers' comp policies, completely separate because they're separate corporations. VACORP came out with a new plan to be able to do volunteer fire and rescue insurance under the county's VACORP plan that we have. So one, we see a better rate for them. We get a better experience modification. And two, we just get economies of scale. So instead of everyone having their own stovepipe singular plan, we've got one consolidated plan. So if you look at the chart right here for FY19, this was the cost of the renewals for Flavanna Fire, I'm sorry, for Lake Monticello. Flavanna Fire, Flavanna Rescue was going to total about $32,363. Through the new VACORP policy, consolidated policy, it's going to be $28,487. We met with the Fire and Rescue Association about 2-3 months ago. They kind of gave us a blessing to move forward doing this. Once we brought back the proposals, they all agreed that this was the way to go. So this is for the workers' comp policy. Secondly, probably about 2, 3, maybe 4 fiscal years ago, the Board of Supervisors decided to fund an optional accident and sickness policy for volunteers. So if they get you know, injured or anything like that in the line of providing services for the citizens, then there's some benefit for them or their family or anything like that if anything happens. The Fire and Rescue Association did have one consolidated accident and sickness policy for all the volunteers, but just, again, through VACORP and through their affiliation with VFIS, who's a kind of a they kind of primarily focus on fire and rescue volunteers and fire and rescue associations. We decided to get a quote also through that plan. So if you see up here currently, and this was the rate for the last three fiscal years, it was $12,885. Through a consolidated quote, we got two different quotes. So right here, the FY19 Plan A, basic, that's basically an apples-to-apples comparison of the FY18 plan. Same coverage, everything. So that plan would be $8,394. Plan B expanded is about $1,700 more, but it provides a slightly larger benefit. Like, for instance, if someone were, I think there's a death benefit, if something were to happen, I think, if I remember correctly, under Plan A, it's about $50,000. Under Plan B, it's $100,000 for the volunteer. So it's just some increased coverages for them. For $1,700 for Plan B, you know, it may be a good, tool to use in our thing for, you know, getting additional volunteers, but that's for the board to decide.
It's still a $2,700 savings.
It is. It's a savings over what we're currently paying in addition to what was budgeted. The Fire and Rescue Association, like I said, we talked to them about this. They were down for us moving forward, and they were on board. They did, obviously, they recommended that we go with Plan B, the Fire and Rescue Association. They're hoping that, you know, just having that additional benefit for them, one, could, you know, potentially, you know, increase some volunteer numbers, and, you know, we'll just have to do a better job of marketing what's available to them as well. So, and as well as, you know, I know Debbie will, and then all the Fire and Rescue Association agencies. So when we look at the 19 budget, so for the fiscal year 19 budget, we had $52,000 in there for workers' comp, and I'll tell you what the big difference is. When we got all of the workers' comp plans back from all the singular proposals, it came in at 32, and our actual came in at 28. The biggest reason for this big fluctuation right there, John Ferris, who's the treasurer of the Lake Monticello Volunteer Rescue Association, he's been going through doing a huge scrub of the volunteer numbers for Lake Monticello and making sure that every month when they do an audit that they've got really good numbers on there. So it's just not, so if someone comes in and volunteers for 1 hour, you know, this month, doesn't mean they're on the roster for every single month. So he's done a really good job of making sure that those numbers are true and accurate.
Keep them down somewhat.
Yeah, he is.
There's been a lot of over-reporting of volunteers, agencies report everyone that's ever signed
sure.
on the
yes.
list.
And that raised it up.
Right, and they're workers' comp, what you're really careful with to maintain super accurate list for workers' comp because it affects your ratings, that affects your premiums a lot on workers' comp, more so than on many other types of insurance. So having somebody being really diligent with scrubbing those lists and making sure these are active volunteers that we're insuring helps us on the rates.
We're gonna also be kind of trying to push this forward to all the other agencies, Savannah Fire and Savannah Rescue also, to make sure that we can get like really good, accurate, monthly active rosters for everyone that's actually on board. And is actually, you know, volunteering.
And the better we're doing that, the more able you are to provide these volunteer accident sickness insurance policies for the volunteers that are serving their time. But if you can save money over here by not paying the workers' comp that we don't need, you can apply it to here. So it's a net savings altogether, but that's one of the ways you can fund and give benefits for our volunteers.
Is it a certain number of hours a week that a volunteer needs to work to be qualified?
It's different by different agencies. They all have a different number of volunteer things, but essentially, pare it down to make it simpler, if you're an active volunteer, an active could mean you got to do one shift a week with this agency. It could mean, you know, two half shifts a week with this. It could be three shifts with that one. But an active volunteer, whatever that agency defines as an active volunteer. Because if they're actively volunteering, making runs, then they should be on the list.
And
if they haven't volunteered in 2 years, we don't need them on the list.
Right.
And it's not a problem if somebody jumps up and makes a run today that hasn't run in 2 years. They'll still be covered, but we don't have to pay the premium for that. It's just a solid rule.
Well, in addition, when they do the workers' comp audit, what they do is they base it on the number of people that were active that month. So if you're saying, you know, someone was active in, you know, April, but they didn't actually, you know, they were actually not, you know, volunteering or active in May, but they were in June. Well, we would want to make sure that in May that we show that they were not active or maybe not volunteering that month because they weren't on, you know, running calls or anything. So all the numbers are based upon the number of people month by month. So that's where we want to get just accurate numbers. But if someone's running, they're going to, and they get hurt, you know, in the line of, you know, providing the service to the citizens of the county, they're going to be covered.
Now, this cost is per volunteer?
No, the entire county.
Yeah, $28,047. That's going to be the new cost for all fire and rescue volunteers.
If that were the cost for every volunteer, you can balance next year's budget and you can lower the tax rate. Okay. If we had that much money. So fortunately, it's not. It's only $28,000 for the entire county for all the volunteers.
So we had budgeted.
That doesn't sound like a very smart question, but they didn't say it.
It's just intuitive for us because we deal with insurance all the time, but it wouldn't be. So it's a good thing for us.
That's the whole fiscal year premium is $28,047 for the fire and rescue, all fire and rescue volunteers for workers' comp. And then in the other column here, so like I said, we budgeted 52. The actual cost is going to be $28,487. So there's going to be some money sitting there to come back in fund balance. In addition to the accident and sickness, we weren't sure where we were going to be when we started this. We had increased the budget to $14,000, but we're actually going to either be at $83,000 or $10,000, depending upon which way the board wants to go. So.
Okay.
Well, the person who has made this study and all, he should get some sort of recognition and all. I mean, he saved us $24,000.
No, that wasn't from him. His was on this one up here.
Yep.
They were $30,000 at one time.
Yeah, they're about $30,000 at one time.
We got a rebate, a refund check of $12,000 or $14,000 this year because it was overpaid. So that's just for his agency. But that's exactly what we want those volunteers to do. He's not a fire rescue volunteer. He's a volunteer with the corporate structure, and that kind of work makes it able for you to cover other things. So we will certainly give him a big pat on the back.
And he's been, like I said, he's been very, very beneficial too. He's the one that got the accident and sickness policies for all the volunteers previously. He's been very beneficial in looking at other insurances. So when we went through a lot of these insurance reviews, we brought him in. We had members of the Fire and Rescue Association, both there, Chief Brent, John Lai, and then John Ferris. We had them available for these presentations. And when they brought the proposals forward, too, so we
can
kind of make
sure.
Hire
him part-time so he can scrub the other agents, too. They might not like that.
Who is this person?
John Ferris is just a civilian citizen at Lake Monticello.
And I will tell you, we went to a meeting Monday night, Mr. Dahl, Nichols, and I, at the Region 5 meeting, and that was one of the first things that Palatine talked about. Is one of their biggest things they're having to deal with is the lack of volunteers, and they're having to now hire their first full-time paid firemen because they can't get enough volunteers. And we've been very blessed, at least on the fire side, of being able to keep that going and actually growing.
On the rescue side. I mean, we still get some from Food and Rescue. We get good coverage from the lake. I mean, we're still in really good shape compared to many counties.
Oh, absolutely. Having to buy one crew rather than buying four crews.
And we're getting new members as we go along.
We're getting ready to
training.
I believe in September they're starting the EMT class out in Kent Store. And
that's what you need.
I passed the fire trucks headed to Lake Monticello. They were going over there to cross train with the lake from Kent Store on the ladder truck.
And buy a brick, by the way. Buy a brick for the burn building.
Buy a brick.
Sorry. Yeah, how's that coming along? I mean, what are we short? $100,000, $200,000 on that?
We don't know. We won't know until we get.
Well, I can tell you what's up.
The bids are due in next week.
Well, yeah, but the fire, are you talking about the bricks or the bids?
No, the cost of the project.
We have $300,000.
Three conversations.
That you've gotten, but we know for sure that some costs are covered by the grant. Once we get the bids back in from the contractors, then we'll have a better idea of how close they are for the construction costs, and then we can start cost estimating, like the parking lot and things like that. So we're not too far off from giving you pretty good numbers, but they're trying to do a lot of fundraising to get to raise funds for the ancillary stuff.
No, they're not, I don't know what they are, but they were not very high. It was low so far.
All right, thank you very much. Any other questions?
So just the three motions. The one motion is just it's basically to treat the volunteers for under policy as employees for the purpose of the workers' comp. And then the other two are just approving the workers' comp and the dollar amount. And then the third motion is to decide what plan you want to go with.
Okay. Do we have motion number one?
I move to approve the resolution entitled a resolution recognizing volunteer firefighters and volunteer emergency medical services agency personnel as employees for purposes of the Virginia Workers' Compensation Act.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair opposed? The chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. I forgot to ask this, Mr. Payne.
Sure.
With me being a volunteer fireman, should
it's
I?
Not a conflict.
Okay. It's not a conflict because it's a matter of general. Okay. Because we're talking about dollars in the next two. Before we went any further, I wanted to make sure I said something. All right, motion number two.
I move to approve the FY19 Volunteer Compensation Insurance Consolidated Plan with VA Baycope at a total cost of $28,487.
Second.
Motion made by Mrs. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Before I mention this next one, I certainly hope we're going to do Plan B.
I think that's a good idea.
Motion number three, then.
Okay.
Please.
I move to approve FY19 Volunteer Accident and Sickness Insurance Plan with VFIS using the Plan B expanded option at a total cost of $10,058.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Thank you, sir. And the next one, T, FY18, Zions Crossroads Water and Sewer System Budget.
The next one, even though it's a large dollar amount, it's strictly kind of really administrative in nature, and I'll kind of go through it. So if you remember, July 5th, 2017, the Board of Supervisors approved the financing for the Zions Crossroads Water and Sewer Project. We closed on the loan August 16th, 2017. Final numbers for that financing, the all-in true interest cost was 3.012%. The par amount was $7.7 million. We received total proceeds with premium of $8.6 million. Annual debt service is $561 for 20 years. Per the local bond and financing agreement, we have to establish for fiscal year 18, an enterprise fund for ZXR, for the Zions Crossroad Project. So that's basically from some of these actions, that's what we're doing. So if we kind of go back and just look at the budget and just kind of show you the history of it, when it kind of originally came about, the county put in $575,000 county contribution out of the general fund, and in two fiscal years in a row, we appropriated $4 million towards the project and then $4,075,000, so a total budget of $8.65 million. Throughout the years, the county, as we've been working on the design of the project, the county's appropriated some additional funds towards the project, and primarily, if you see from $8.65 to $8.670, we've really just been doing a swap of transfer of funds from the debt proceeds, because at this point we didn't have any debt proceeds when we were doing this. So the budget really hasn't increased but by $20,000 in column revised budget number one.
Did you have a 10% built-in extra in the budget?
No. So for this one, no. Since when we did the budget for this, this was just kind of a for lack of better words, a swag estimate, okay. Scientific guess.
The full budget is 10 or 11 or...
It's good. Yeah. Well, the full budget...
That has the contingency in it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that would be 10% of the 10 or 11 million.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once the invitation for bids come back in, that's when we're really going to know what the budget costs are and what sure. we're going to need.
July 24th? July 24th?
Yeah.
July 24th is when the bids come back.
So August 6th, we'll know.
So this 720, though, we're talking about, it's not anymore, per se. That's...
No, so let me just explain. So at the beginning of, as I said, for fiscal year 18, we had to create an enterprise fund budget for Zion's Crossroads. So the numbers that we had outstanding at the beginning of fiscal year 18, we had $178,733 in county contribution, county cash available, because we've spent about $600,000 so far on the Zion's Crossroad design, acquisition, and some of that stuff. And since we kind of have been transferring the debt proceeds currently, our estimated debt proceeds were at 7.8. When you go to what we actually received in debt proceeds when the loan closed, we received $8.6 million. So the difference between those two is the 700 and what was it, 720,000?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that's what we're doing. Okay. We're just recognizing the budget, what we actually received in debt proceeds versus what's outstanding in the budget. So approving the new actions, the county contribution hasn't changed. It's still the $178,000. The debt proceeds budget is $8.6 million. So the current budget's for basically fiscal year 18, will be almost 8.8 million now.
Plus cash contributions down the line that we'll put in.
Yes. Once we get all the invitation for bids back, we'll have to come back to the board, unless, you know, the bids come back just ridiculously low, and we'll be happy. But I'm not anticipating that. So we're coming to you last minute in the fiscal year for this because, one, we were hoping that we were going to get the bids back before the fiscal year ended. And we thought we were going to have this process going a little sooner, and we were going to kind of come back to the board with one comprehensive budget amendment for what we needed for county contribution plus directing the debt proceeds. But since the bids aren't going to be done before the end of this fiscal year, it's necessary to do the actions for this fiscal year. So I can take questions, and then right there are the motions. For that, like I said, the $8,070,000, that was the budget remaining for fiscal at the beginning of fiscal year 18. And then motion number two is just recognizing the addition in debt proceeds that we actually receive versus what's in the budget right now.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $8,070,863.19 in revenue and expenditures effective July 1st, 2017 from the 2000 FY18 Zion's Crossroads Water and Sewer CIP budget to the FY18 Zion's Crossroads Water and Sewer Enterprise Fund budget.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $720,449.30 in revenue and expenditures effective August 2nd, 2017 for the FY18 Zion's Crossroads Water and Sewer Enterprise Fund budget. That amount, which exceeded the existing debt proceeds budgeted amount of $7,892,130, reflecting actual Virginia revenue of Virginia Resource Authority debt proceeds issued in the amount of $8,612,579.30.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien. I thought we were in trouble for a second.
Nah, we're not in any trouble. Not yet, anyway.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
That is not funny.
You.
Heart stop.
That's a dramatic pause. We're getting Hollywood in here. U, Fluvanna County, Virginia Water Tank Tower Site Application Form, Mr. Dahl.
All right, so as part of the process, as we're trying to go through and get all of our towers and water tanks leased and get some carriers on there so we can start getting revenue, we've been working with our consultant, Atlantic Group, and kind of working on our processes and what we should have in place. We've worked with the county attorney's office to review the forms and things, so... really what we're asking for is a water tank tower site application form. It's the approval of it, but with that goes a $3,000 non-refundable fee. So this is just a standard application for the county to use with carriers. It basically kind of reserves space on the tower for them while they're working on the lease negotiations with the county. So during this time, if you know someone else comes and they want section 150 feet between 150 and 160 feet, well, we're not going to enter into any agreement or any application with another carrier because carrier A has already reserved that space and they're working on a lease with the county.
And that's only good for 90 days.
It's good for 90 days for them to start moving forward and getting things done.
So after 90 days, if they haven't finished the negotiations and someone else comes along, do you drop that one?
We could, but I mean, if we're so far along, we may not want to do that. I mean, if the carrier's doing their due diligence and they're moving forward, and maybe there's just some things outside of normal circumstances that were prohibited from everything being done, then we would probably would not want to do
it. But at the end of 9 days, if we've not come to an agreement or things are not moving, they do not have a reservation anymore.
Yep.
If you want to reserve it again for 9 days, it's another $3,000 fee.
And is this customary with other counties?
Yes, it is. So all counties, well, besides this county, anyone that owns a tower, they're going to charge a fee like this. And some private tower private tower owners even charge a larger fee than this.
Just like a water reservation fee, a company may be building a plant, but they want to reserve a certain amount of water capacity, they pay a reservation fee, even though they're not using any water now, but that's so that we don't assign that water volume to someone else.
But you do need a cutoff because they can just keep on going.
Yeah, we don't want them
just so we don't want now. So we don't want them to endlessly have some slot reserved when we don't get any benefit of it. But
well,
we can also sell it to somebody else.
That's right. Well, and for $3,000, that's honestly a small little pot of money for them when they may be trying to box out one of the other competitors.
How many slots do we have?
Well, I mean, on every tower, I mean, most of our towers are, one's 300, some's 250. The master chart, it'll be ready soon.
Okay. We have that one I talked to you about. It's kind of it's an 11 by 17 master chart that shows all the towers in the county, what we paid for them, what they are.
No, that chart's ready, but we don't have like a tower, like a an elevation thing showing we've got this spot, this spot, this
spot. Well, that's what I was wondering.
No, we can.
That master chart, though, will say how many open slots there are.
Is it? That's really good.
What the potential rent is from those.
As soon as you approve this tomorrow, we've got one carrier that's ready to go, and I didn't want to let the carrier know that we were ready to go until we had this approved. They already went through their entry and testing agreement. They've done their due diligence. They met with Wayne Stevens and our consultant at one of the Fuzzy Water Tanks. They want to go on one of the they want to go in the Fuzzy Water Tank down off of 15. And like I said, once the board approves this tonight, I'll be sending this application to them tomorrow. And
does that run about $1,800 a month?
For carriers?
Yeah.
No, it's probably closer to at least $2,000 a month.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I think most of the ours go between about $2,000 and $3,000. But it depends on where it is on the tower, how much is needed, and whether you're a commercial carrier selling space or whether you're government, but in general between $2,000 and $3,000.
I think the cheapest monthly that we're getting right now, I want to say it's around $2,200 to $2,400 a month, and I think one of them they're paying about $2,700 to $2,800 a month.
Where does that money go to now?
Well, it depends. If it's a fuzzy tower, if it's fuzzy, then it goes into fuzzy. But if it's on one of the county towers, then it goes into the general fund.
So that one would go to Fuzzy.
This particular one that I'm talking about, they're ready to go on Fuzzy, so that'll help Fuzzy's bottom line.
I was going to say, thankful for that, because then they will pay back.
I was going to say, then they can be able to pay back our loan.
Yep.
All right. Unexpected.
All righty.
So like I said, this is getting the license holding fee that's associated with the application for $3,000. We talked about what it does. County administrator would execute this application as he deems appropriate. This doesn't go before the board every time. Obviously, once we do go into a formal lease, it'll need to be a public hearing, and the board would approve that lease and those dollar amounts. And this will be a new revenue source for the county.
Any questions?
No, I think we have a good plan on these towers in the future, and yeah, I think we'll get our money back.
That's the whole goal.
Yeah, I think we've done well on that one.
So why don't you make the motion?
That's a long one. You think I can get through it? I move the Board of Supervisors approve the Fluvanna County VA Water Tank Tower Site application form, which will be utilized between the county and the interested carriers, and approve the associated new limited license holding fee in the amount of $3,000, and further authorize the county administrator to accept the application with entitles for a limited license holding period as he deems appropriate from time to time, subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Second.
I'm not as fast as you.
That's right. Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. K. Fiber extension to Parks and Recreation Office at Pleasant Grove House.
Okay, so we've been, county, Mr. Notman, has been in contact with the provider, the contractor that's been doing a lot of the fiber throughout the county, the fiber project. So this proposal is for an additional 1,500 feet of fiber in conduit, trenching, covering, seating, all connections, tying the Pleasant Grove House to the fiber network. So like I said, it'll start right off where 53 at the entrance of the Pleasant Grove Park and go all the way back to the Pleasant Grove House. It'll provide for higher bandwidth and a direct connection to the county network, better technical support from IT. And it's also, once we get the new voice over IP phone system too, that system will tie directly in with our network and the phone system as well. It's going to eliminate existing service costs once everything's fully implemented, about $2,800 a year.
And the wireless option we talked about before, Mr. Ryan had addressed the tower at the sheriff's office where we can tap wireless to from there to the Pleasant Grove House. Does not have line of sight at a height in the tower we can use. And so Mr. Nava looked at potential wireless solutions from like out at the sign in front of Pleasant Grove to get back to the house, and they won't accommodate our network. So we can either put conduit in the ground and then fiber in the conduit, or you can just run fiber in the ground, which is probably more dangerous because if somebody does some digging along there, you're going to cut it. And this is just the long-term solution. The board didn't originally fund any offshoots of the fiber system, so this is really an additional request because we were researching other alternatives and options. We just don't have any other alternatives and options to connect directly to that building.
Still going to provide long-term savings, so it's fine.
Oh, it certainly is going to be savings because we're coming off one thing and it'll be part of the county network. And I hate to spend the $8,000 cost to do this, but there's no other technical way that we know, other than to keep them the status quo, paying $2,800 a year, and they're not on our network. They can't get to the same files that we get the rest of the county.
But this doesn't cost us anything down the road additional. We're doing a one-time cost of $8,000, so it takes us 3 years to pay it off.
It may make some sense. I think we'll be bringing fiber out there to look at providing some sort of public Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and I'll certainly have Mr. Nama look at it because I think that's reasonable. We already have people go to the library now at night and sit in the parking lot to use the Wi-Fi there.
Huh.
And frankly, if it doesn't cost us any extra for somebody to do that, especially at night, that's probably a good idea. The problem with nighttime at the Pleasant Grove is this.
Park's closed.
You can't be in the park after dusk. But during the day, if somebody's back there, it certainly makes sense. And if it's not going to cost us any extra to just make the Wi-Fi available there, then we do in these buildings.
So. Sure.
All righty. Any questions? Do I have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $8,455 from the BOS contingency budget to the county fiber infrastructure project budget to extend the fiber from the entrance of the Pleasant Grove Park to the Pleasant Grove House.
Do I have a second? Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0.
Probably in July, we'll give you an update on the fiber project, July or August. Because it's almost done, but we are getting a higher E-rate reimbursement. The schools and library are a higher E-rate reimbursement than was originally planned. So the county will get its full, it's about $340,000.
I was sitting there, it's about 380 stuck in my mind.
It could be, sir. It's just in the 3-4 range, and that will come back. We've gotten 160 or 70 of it so far.
Okay.
But it's a better deal than it was originally when you approved it, so that's good.
Yeah, because we were afraid it wasn't going the other direction.
Yeah, just didn't know for sure.
Mm. All righty. Yeah. B, Farm Heritage Museum Barn Construction Amendment Number 4, Ms. Toller.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We are almost done building the Farm Heritage Museum. Construction is more or less done. Paint is supposed to go up either later this week, early next week. So we are almost done with it. We have, staff has recommended in an effort to make sure water drains away from the building, doesn't cause damage to the structure or anything that's inside of it. We've asked the contractor to look at trenching the drain away from the building to pull the water away from it. He has come back with a quote with $3,500. That'll include the trenching, the pipe, labor, reconstruction of the front gravel sidewalk, new leveling and seating of 4 trenches in the back of the building, and 4 short trenches in the front of the building leading to a long trench on the north side of the building. Take a quick look at the funding that up for the building. The county has contributed $69,470. That's all of the county's contributions so far. The Historic Society actually has come up with a little bit of extra funding, and I'll get to that in a minute. They have funded so far $274,999 for a total funding commitment of $344,469. You'll see all the project design and construction costs are all listed there, including all the amendments, including this one we're asking for tonight. We've also purchased the light fixtures. The light fixture installation, we have put a little bit of a wedge there for it. Our Public Works Department is going to see if they can do the installations in-house, so that might save a little bit there. They're hoping to be able to do that, but if not, we just put that wedge in there just to be safe. So that does leave an additional funding required of the $3,500.
And now, remember, you'd like to go back one time. If you look on here, this cost in Amendment 2 and cost in Amendment 3 and the cost in Amendment, the light fixture cost, those will be additional funds raised and contributed by the Historical Society. And they also have committed to $5,000 a year for 5 years in additional fundraising. So it'll be another $25,000 that will come off the $69,000 up top of the county's contribution. And then they also went in and held in advance their $525,000 that normally fund them each year, so another $2,500. So about $27,500 is what will come off up top here, but they're also paying for these 3 items down below, about $16,000
more. That $5,000 a year for 5 years, that accounted for this?
It's not accounted
not
for.
On the next slide, it is. The next slide, this is everything that the Historic Society has committed to. At the contract signing for the building, they committed to $270,000, as well as the $5,000 a year, and the reduces in funding for the $525,000. They then committed to paying for the interior walls, the addendum 2, the painting the exterior, the addendum 3, and the light fixtures. They have already contributed, we have received a check from them for this amount. So over the next 5 years, that leaves their future commitment at just over $38,000. They've committed to repay to the county.
When would we have received the $274,000? When would that have come through to us?
We've already gotten it.
Yeah, the check's already been cashed.
We just got a check for $272,000 and change about 2-3 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's already here. Now, they did come up with additional funding that they, along with what they had already committed to, was $4,574. And again, that amount of money has already come to us as well. So as far as the motions, if you have any questions, do you have any questions?
How many light fixtures are they putting up?
There are six interior light fixtures, big round, hanging from the ceiling. There's also on the exterior 14 smaller ones.
Yeah, I saw it with the economic development and tourism, and it's not as big as I thought it was from the pictures. So I don't know how they're going to fit all that
farm equipment in there. Yeah, I mean, it's still a pretty big building, and it's tall enough to fit the tallest pieces.
Yeah, sure is tall.
So they may have to do some finagling to get everything in there. So.
Change it out?
Yeah.
And the one thing about the $3,500, it will look a lot better if we put them underground than it is with the black pipes that are across the top of the ground right now.
Sure. Yeah. They'll wash everything out if you leave them like they are.
Right.
You really need good drainage away.
Yeah.
And remember, that building had to be, we had to raise the ground up quite a bit to make sure that it works properly.
It falls off steeply.
It's steep on the back side.
Yeah, the whole property back there does, but behind the building, if you're 4 or 5
it's
feet
steep,
above
pretty steep.
Where it was below.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All righty. Any questions? Do we have a motion? First motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve Amendment Number 4 between the County of Fluvanna, Virginia, and... Reading the right one? Yeah. And how do you pronounce that?
UOG.
Fugue, I think is how they pronounce it. Yeah.
Interbuild, Inc. For the purpose of increasing the scope of work to include trenching and burying the roof drain piping, increasing the total contract by $3,500, and further authorize the county administrator to execute the amendment subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Number two.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $3,500 from the FY18 Board of Supervisor contingency budget to the Farm Heritage Museum CIP budget for Fugue Interbuild Amendment Number 4.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
Okay, I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $4,573.80 for the Farm Heritage Museum CIP budget from additional funds received from the Fluvanna County Historical Society.
Do we have a second? Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. And we are now to appointments, Mr. Nichols. Board of Commission appoint and committee appointments. Agricultural Forestry District Advisory Council, Landowners 2, Community Policy and Management Team, CPMT, Vendor Representative, Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Council, Chamber of Commerce Representative, Fluvanna County Finance Board, James River Alcohol Safety Action Plan, ASAP, Junk Board of Directors, Library Board of Trustees, Planning Commission, Columbia District Planning Commission, Rivanna District, Social Services Board, Columbia District, and Social Services Board, Cunningham District.
So we're experimenting on these tonight. On the screen, you'll see part of the sheet that was in your package. And you have a hard copy of this in front of you, in case you want to make any notes on how to do it. Especially when you have large numbers of appointments like this. We're going to try this for a few months to see if it works. Where this, all the appointments you need to fill in, these blocks like on the screen, and the rest of the sheet lists all the candidates that are available for those specific ones. Now, on the slate tonight, you have only reappointments or single candidate appointments. So if you wanted to approve all the names that are on the lower part of that sheet, they're all will fit into the slots up above. So you really have not made decisions unless you decide you want more candidates for a specific one. Then we'd have to go back and we'd just advertise some more. But these are all either reappointments or single applicant slots. The one thing you've got two or three applicants for a position that's on your July 11th agenda, it'll be like this as well. And we'll, again, remind those candidates ahead of time to come if they want to speak to the board, they can.
And we'll do them separately then, sort of.
They'll be like this.
Still like, okay.
Because it gives you a comprehensive look of everyone who's up for a board or commission. Because sometimes you do these, we did 10 or 12 of these sequential, you may end up appointing somebody to seven different boards and, you know, not remember from three times before. This way you can see them all in your package ahead of time and know what they are, what the vacancy is, and then, of course, their applications are also in the package, like you can see on the screen. All the applications from those candidates are in your package as well. So this is intended to make it easier for the public to know what board, commission, and committee appointments. We're just going to make this 7A on the agenda. So you'll have your action items, and then the appointment action items will be next. That's what 7A is. And so in this case, all the names fit into the slots up above, unless you want us to go back and re-advertise.
All right, real quick.
Yep.
I see the one for Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Council.
That's the Chamber of Commerce.
That's the Chamber of Commerce representative. That's not the, when you had Columbia District written on there, no. You had me fooled on that.
This column, okay. One of the reasons that column is on there is because we want to show you where your candidates are coming from for all the various boards and commissions.
Right.
Some boards, commissions, and committees require a specific district.
The only reason I brought that up is I had a phone call from Mr. Putnam, who wanted to be on that as the Columbia representative.
He's a reappointment of the other national because there's multiple people.
Okay, so
this is the chamber rep. It's their appointment. And you appointed, but it's the chamber's nominee for the chamber.
Mary Marks, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, she's a business person in the Columbia district, and she's a member of the chamber board, and they're nominating her as their representative on the EdTac.
She's very active with the chamber.
Yep.
And I think I'd highly recommend her.
She's dynamic.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Anybody can come up with a business plan the way she's come up with a business plan?
Yeah.
What happened to Ms. Carlesa?
She's moving out of the area. She's moving back to the D.C. area, and unfortunately, but she's going to be closer to her grandchildren, and so she had to vacate her seat at the end of this month. And so that's why we've got new candidates for the commission.
Okay.
There were several candidates. Two of them decided not to move forward. And Ms. Key is still on there is the candidate for that position. So
who were the other candidates? Who were the other candidates?
Mr. Dorsey and Deborah Curry. Deborah Curry and Mr. Dorsey. And neither one followed up with interest for this time.
All righty.
I must say, Mr. Chairman, that as I view the Planning Commission, we have an excellent Planning Commission, but I think in a lot of ways, Ms. Carlesa was the star.
Yes.
So I think the county owes her a real debt of gratitude for her service.
Yeah, she brought incredible experience to that because she had professional experience in the area, and that was really helpful. And you always want to look for as much of that as you can find from various boards, commissions, and committees. But there's a lot of good citizens that are capable of serving.
Yeah.
I certainly had no knowledge of planning before I was on the Planning Commission, and I didn't feel too much so.
Or so we know.
Staff.
Yeah.
Teach you a lot more stuff in class. So.
All righty. Any questions from anyone about anything?
I'm fine making a whole
set. Okay, make a move. Make a motion, Mr.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board commission or committee appointments. And are we going to list each one?
And I think if you just list, say, Andrew Pullen, Agnew Forestall, Rebecca Ragsdale, Agnew Forestall, that way the names are just on the record.
James River Alcohol Safety Action Plan, Jeff Haislett. John Board of Directors, David Freisler. Library Board of Trustees, Elva Key, Sharon Haley, Barbara Gorshorn. Planning Commission, Columbia District, Ed Zimmer. Planning Commission, Rivanna District, Chiquetta, Murray Key. Social Services Board, Columbia District, Sandra Patterson. Social Services Board, Cunningham District, Linda Mitchell.
In the front, there's four on the front.
Pardon, it says. Agricultural Forestal District, Andrew Pullen. Community Policy Management Team.
You got another one.
Oh, and Rebecca Ragsdale.
There's two of them there, huh?
Yeah.
Community Policy and Management Team, Sean Collins. Economic Development and Tourism Advisory, Mary Marks.
That's it. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Whoop.
I don't think we, I think we missed Mr. Garcia at the top on the back page.
Oh, we did, Mr. Garcia.
Savannah County Finance Board. Sorry. So another motion for that, since we already made it, or are we amending the current?
Well, let's finish the first one, and then we can go back and redo it.
You just
or amend it.
Amend it.
Just make a separate motion, Mr. Garcia.
Second motion.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
Mr. Chair, I move that we appoint Rudy Garcia to the Savannah County Finance Board.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
Welcome, Mrs. Keys.
We have to get ready for training.
All righty. Presentations, XYZ. 2015 Comprehensive Plan Goal Status, Mr. Newman.
Good evening. The Comprehensive Plan was adopted in September 2015. The next update will be in 2020. We have 44 goals in our Comprehensive Plan and 110 strategies to reach those goals. The planning staff and the Planning Commission are involved in 58 out of 110 strategies for the Comprehensive Plan. We have successfully completed 27 out of the 58 that involve the Plan Department or Planning Commission. Furthermore, out of those 58 strategies, 26 of those involve a timeline date of being accomplished by 2016, 2017, and we have accomplished 11 out of 26 of those timeline goals. Most of the incomplete strategies that we have require working with other departments, such as Public Works, Virginia Department of Transportation, Parks and Rec, and subdivision and zoning text amendments would help solve some of those. Mr. Stewart's not here this evening. He says the reason why we haven't made more progress is perhaps we were a little bit too ambitious. Staff has been busy the past few years, and it just takes time to do some of these things. So if you have any questions, I can take down those comments and give them to Mr. Stewart, and then we can come back to all with the information he'll like.
Any comments or questions?
Like any comprehensive plan, they're dreamless in many cases, the strategic initiatives that are related to them, and there's no way you could ever finish them in a couple of years, but we are really busy. Many of the things that are in that plan are already being worked on by staff, and for lots of reasons, not just because of the comp plan, so we'll do a comprehensive update on the status of each individual one as we go forward. And we'll tie that with your strategic initiatives that you adopt every couple of years to make sure we don't have too much cross coverage, because they were on both in some cases.
So the view on the last statement there on subdivisions and text amendments, that's sort of marking for some higher density in the form of text amendments as opposed to a separate.
Yeah, similar like R3, which would have higher density.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Stuff that we're working on,
yeah.
Well, Mr. Stewart and Mr. Robinson, they were very busy the other day because I tried to convince them to come out and help me put fence posts in, and they didn't want any part of that.
Wouldn't help you, would they?
They wouldn't. They did not want any parts of that.
If you'd asked a strapping young man like our fine
very good
colleague there.
There you go.
Absolutely. Yeah. You'd have been right there with us.
That's right. I'm talking out two at a time.
Any other questions?
And the sad news is that Mr. Newman has done a fantastic job for us, but he's got a great new job opportunity as the zoning administrator for Fredericksburg.
Yes, City of Fredericksburg.
Zoning administrator for Fredericksburg. So his last day with us is July 13th, after your next meeting. So we're in the process of recruiting for his position.
Well, thank you for your service.
It's been wonderful to work with the board, with our planning commission. I really appreciate the opportunities that I've had here.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All righty. So, consent agenda. A, minutes of February 28, 2018, work session, Ms. Harris. C, minutes of June 6, 2018, Ms. Harris. D, accounts payable, Eric Dahl, Deputy County Administrator. E, FY18, Department of Social Services, share of the cost allocation funds, Mr. Dahl. F, temporary additional duties pay, Melton, Mr. Dahl. G, temporary additional duties pay, Peterson, Mr. Sheriff Hess. H, Second Amendment to Tower Structure Lease Agreement with New Singular Wireless PCS LLC, Mr. Dahl. And I, CRMF request, air cooling and humidity control system at public safety building. Mr. Stevens. Are we pulling anything?
Let's look at I to discuss it. A little bit of discussion on that.
Mr. Stevens is not here, but this one, when the new radio system was put in, we don't know why, but when the new radio system was put in, all the extra equipment that they added into the sheriff's office IT room has just created a lot more heat and ventilation problems in the sheriff's office than what was there before. And I talked to Mr. Stevens this afternoon. He said he's not sure necessarily why that wouldn't have been included, you know, as a discussion item from Motorola, but it just wasn't. It wasn't anticipated that we were going to have to change anything in the IT room. The IT room is about like twice the size of my office or something. You know, it's not a huge room. It's just it's kind of a long sitting room next to the E911 center. But you can't handle the load over there, and the system needs replaced. Now that system is already 11 years old or 12 years old, and so it's coming near to the end of its useful public building life anyway, but it's a sooner than anticipated expense, and we need a heavier load to cover for that building with the new equipment.
Did anybody, who did you say recommended this?
Mr. Stevens.
Uh-huh. Does this have anything to do with the energy system? In other words, is that going to reduce cost by doing this also? And who gets the benefit of that?
No, it's likely to increase cost because it may be a more efficient system.
That's what I'm wondering.
It's a higher capacity system, so the electricity cost will probably be higher.
But it could be neutral then.
I just don't know if what the difference is between the old system and the new system. But the new system is a higher capacity system, so because it's 11 or 12 years newer, maybe
more efficient and maybe less energy.
It's conceivable, sir. It certainly is. I can ask Mr. Stevens to follow up with the board and let him know.
Here's my question for that one is, we tell you, I'm sure we've crossed our T's and dotted our I's, checked with Train to make sure that we're not affecting our energy agreement.
Well, that's what I was wondering. That's where I was going on that.
Okay. I figured that's what you were talking about. Making sure that we're not doing something to shoot ourselves in the foot.
Right.
Because I think one of those boilers in the school system some months ago, maybe 6 months ago or earlier, Train advised that we needed to change that. So my question is, who would really pay for that and who gets the benefit of that? But that was a while back. And I'm wondering how this works back and forth.
This unit is used to cool just the data center room.
It's what?
It's used to cool just the data center room, which is a very small room. Mm-hmm. You have to keep the data center typically about below 70 degrees is what you typically try to do. Then you do that to make sure that you have time to react in case temperatures go up above that. At about 102 degrees, everything shuts down. So it's very specific in its requirements and its needs, and if you add more equipment, certainly you're going to blow more heat in there. You'd be surprised how much comes out of computers in that room. So
we'll check to make sure there's no impact on Train, and then find out the energy efficiency of this versus the old one. The old one's actually 14 years old, not
11. Now, here's my next question. Should we hold off on this until we check with Train, or can we check with Train once we do this?
Okay. There's not going to be an impact. The Train has...
I know that they got certain things like we can't... No teacher can adjust a room temperature or it immediately voids it. It's got to be done by the...
I think Mr. Winkler, though, I think he's pretty much up on these.
I think Mr. Winkler is, if I could say it publicly, over-concerned.
I know he's over-concerned, but, we all want to keep an eye on it.
There's no guarantee in this one. And his budget will be held harmless.
Sure.
But it's good that everybody's tracking it. We need to track it very closely.
But there's a couple of catches. Yeah, we've got to make sure we don't do anything
to invalidate
guarantee.
I do believe that if we probably had an inefficient system, we could
trying to cool down the space that was not being cooled versus maybe a larger system that could actually efficiently do it. Except not knowing the actual cost of it.
We'll check that before we...
This is one of those things that has to be done. It just has to be done to make sure they know what's going on. So.
The other thing is it also runs 24/7 every day.
Uh-huh.
Like me, 24/7.
All the time. In winter, I don't know if...
You're crazy.
I can use it in water, but...
Yes, sir. All righty.
Very good.
We're good?
Yeah.
All righty. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the items E through I.
You mean A?
A through I. Uh-huh.
Do I have a second?
On the consent agenda.
And we deferred B?
Yes.
Yes, uh-huh.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. We will now go to the unfinished business of the pay plan inclusion policy. No pressure, Ms. Rice, but everybody's been rolling right through these things.
Right. It's just down to either the O'Brien plan or the Sheridan plan, right?
Yeah, so this is, we've been talking about this for a little while, right?
Oh, God.
Is it the O'Sheridan plan?
It's very patriotic.
It always is for them.
Okay.
Well, that's a good thing. You should be taking care of your employees, Mr.
Oh, Brown. Yes. Who's going to take care of the taxpayers along the way, too?
These employees are taxpayers as well.
The ratio I would go for any time.
I was going to say, not all, but a good portion.
Go talk to the city of Richmond about how many actually live in the city. There was a statistic at that meeting we were at the other day that said 20% of their employees of that county were from the county. 80% came from outside the county to the county. We're just the opposite.
Northern Virginia, I'm sure, is the same way, especially in education. All right, Ms. Rice.
So we are here again talking about our cost of living increase. The first pay period for FY19 actually starts this coming Sunday.
And you have to make a decision tonight.
So we're looking for some guidance as I'm getting ready to load everybody's information into our payroll system this week. So... We reviewed last time several different options as far as how do we apply the approved cost of living increase for our county staff. I'll get to that in a couple of slides. I believe we had the Sheridan plan and the Simple plan and some other plans on there. Today we actually reached out to other local entities. There were a couple of folks that didn't get back to us by the time we put this together, but up here you can see different counties and Charlottesville, how they're treating cost of living increases for their staff. So with Buckingham, everyone gets the cost of living increase so long as you are here on the day that it takes effect, July 1st. Same with Charlottesville, same with Greene County, and Louisa County has a 60-day stipulation where they need to be here May 1st for a July 1st pay increase. The other ones up there, Goochland County and Greene County, they are using more of a merit-based system. So they're wrapping up performance appraisals into that process where that's different from what we're doing today. The staff actually is coming forward tonight with a recommendation just to give you an idea of where we're coming from and here's some of the rationale for what we're recommending. Basically, part of what I talked about last time was the cost of living increase is simply, it's related to inflation and the cost of living here in our community. It's not based on performance or merit or longevity with the organization. We actually have some agencies here in the county that currently offer pay increases that are related to their probationary status. So there are some agencies that do tie pay increases to probation currently. That's separate from the approved cost of living increase. And then also, if we're doing an across-the-board type of an approach, you can actually budget easier for it. You're always prepared for what's right in front of you. And then if we have newer people come on board, it's usually going to cost the county less. So with that being said, we have up here the three plans. He's got red, white, and blue up here for you.
This is a patriotic decision.
So the Sheridan plan is still up there for consideration, and that would be employers are not eligible for a general county pay raise approved during their initial employee probation period until they're actually off from probation. It would go into effect the following pay period. The second plan, there is an O'Brien plan up there. Employees are not eligible for a general county pay raise or COLA increase until they've been on board for at least 6 months.
And you actually said 4 months. We just use 6 because that's the basic probation period.
And then the simple plan is basically you need to be on board when the cost of living increase comes into effect, and that would apply to every employee regardless of probation status. So those are the three options that we have up there, and currently what you approved back in April is the must be on board for 6 months before the start of the raise, and you have to be off of your first probationary period as a new employee. So here's where we're at currently, and we are looking for a little bit of guidance on how to move forward. We can stay with where we're at, or we can choose one of the three here. And the staff at this time is actually recommending the simple plan, and that is due to all of these items up here.
And it matches most of the surrounding counties.
So go back to your red, white, and blue.
So some of the commentary off to the side, you can take a look here at what some of the challenges are versus what some of the benefits are to each plan.
Yeah, I mean, I just fundamentally don't understand the logic of having somebody start May, 25th and getting a raise 5 days later. To me, that just
doesn't make sense to me.
Whether it's 6 months, 4 months, 60 days.
The reason Louisa does 2 months is they say they do it for budgeting purposes, which is
they're in
the middle. They've already adopted the budget by then.
Wonder how the taxpayers feel about that.
But they do it so they can include those new employees 2% in the budget. Mm-hmm. When we estimate a 2% or 1.5%, we do it across the board anyway to get a broad estimate. It's always less than that because if somebody new gets hired, it often comes in less than the previous person. So if somebody leaves before the raise, the number is different. It always works out. The number is always okay. But you're talking about.
Plus, that differential would be in the contingency fund anyhow, if you were really.
It is. We've never had to go back to the well to ask for personnel costs that we didn't have available through personnel contingency, unless we were just hiring a new employee mid-year. It's always budgeted for.
The problem I see with mine is I go back to the thing where we have some people that are on probation for 6 months, some people on probation for a year.
Sure.
I mean, you laughed when you said Dozier and the thing, but I mean, if we did mine, I would not say hold it away from them more than 6 months. Even if, if they're on a year-long probationary period, at 10 to 6 months, they get the raise.
That becomes the O'Brien plan, right? Because whatever 4 or 6 months is, if all you're doing is saying you're not eligible for a pay raise until
you're
X amount of time.
But when we hire people, don't we hire them at market value?
Yes, that's always a consideration. But market value, when I say market value, it's higher market value to is it a $40,000 job? Is it a $42,000 job? Is it an $80,000 job? We don't say it's $40,000 plus we're going to build in the 2%, so it's $40,800.
Right. No.
We don't put the 2% in. We just say we hire at market rates. And my expectation has never been that I would get a raise from my employer 2 weeks after I got there.
Right.
But remember, you're talking about a minuscule amount of money, probably $5,000 total, and it is going to cost us at least $5,000 in time to create systems to monitor and max all these. But we just need a decision from you. Whichever way you feel best and comfortable for the citizens, just tell us which one you want.
Well, I think that Tony's plan is more fair.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with Tony's plan.
I don't know how it would cost $5,000 to, you know, make a note that if you were hired May 1st, then you're eligible for the plan, but I mean,
yeah, you're still going to be
employed. I don't know how you guys run, but that seems...
Or we're looking at it just this way. If you were hired on May 1st, then you become eligible to get the COLA November 1st at the end of 6 months. That's where you'll be.
You can't keep...
That would be harder.
You're making it more complicated. If you say a COLA... Okay, if I go on board July 1st, and there's a COLA July 2nd, but I can't get it for 6 months, so now I've got to remember, this guy came on board July 2nd, July 1st. The COLA is on July 2nd. Now I've got to mark down that we need to give him a pay raise outside of the norm for wherever else he gets a pay raise at a different time. And you're talking about 20 or 30 employees that might have to think about that.
You might have to, but if you tell them ahead of time, this is we're hiring you on this day, and at this day you're entitled to a cost of living, they're going to come and remind you.
In theory, but not always.
Well, that's their problem.
You know, I completely agree with that. And Sailor's really good. We just went through a huge exercise with looking at sheriff's office personnel, and we found issue after issue that you would have thought the employer would have said something when they weren't getting paid for something. So, anyway, just tell us which one you want.
All right.
You fill with us.
What do we think?
Two times that much.
The O'Brien?
60 days, 90 days.
6 months.
6 months?
That's
yeah.
What you have.
That's
what
that's
what
they
originally
said 4 months.
What do you want?
I think I said 3 months.
Yeah, I think 3 months is fine. I mean, 4 to 3 months is fine. I think 6 months is a little long myself.
The only reason I use 6 is because that's the basic probation. Everybody is at least 6 months probation. But just remember, none of these will be retroactive.
Right.
And they won't be.
What about 4 months?
Pay raises happen 3 weeks before they happen. They don't
have money. All right. 4 months. He said he could read 4 months.
So if someone would read just the motion, the gray, and that center one, and say 4 months instead of
6 months. All right, Mr. O'Brien.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a revised county staff pay plan policy as stated below. Employees are not eligible for a general county pay raise or COLA increase until they have been on board for at least 4 months.
Second. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
Now, remember, that means the person has to be on board when the raise was given.
Right. Right.
And so this raise actually starts June 25th. If someone comes on board July 3rd, they're not getting this raise. They would wait till the next one. Correct. But if they are on board, then end of 4 months, they would get that raise starting from that point forward.
Right.
Got it.
Because if you hire them July 3rd and it starts June 25th, well, technically.
They missed it?
No, they didn't miss it. It'll be in their hiring practice.
Well, say that if they came within the 4 month period.
Are you saying 4 months before?
No.
If
they come after we start.
The raise starts July 1st.
Right.
If a person starts July 3rd, they're not eligible for July 1st raise.
Right.
If somebody's on board now.
If they come on July 3rd and there's a raise August 1st, then after they've been on board 4 months, they get the August 1st raise. But they got to be on board when the raise is given.
Correct.
So they may be on board for 3 months and 29 days when the raise starts, but they've got to be on board when the raise starts. We just gave a raise in January of 2018, January 1st. If someone came on board in March, they don't get the January 1st raise ever because it's not retroactive.
Right. But isn't that what you're kind of saying right now, though? I'm confused. I mean, if an
employee comes on board today, mm-hmm. they're going to be eligible 4 months from now to get the July 25th raise.
That's not the way I thought of it, but, I mean, that sounds more like what Mike was talking about.
Well, it's a combination of the two.
I mean, to me, it was.
If they come on board for today,
right? You
said they had to wait 4 months before they get the raise.
That they had to be hired 4 months prior to the raise is what we're really.
Oh
saying.
No!
I
think it's the other way.
People like can use the plan, but instead of 60 days, saying.
That's what I thought I'd said. That was, you know, I thought what Mike said was more like what you were describing.
That's why we're asking questions, because I guess I'm confused.
Yeah, I mean, to me, again, it was that if the raise is baked in, you're hired July, you know, July 1st, if you're hired July 1st, presumably you were hired at market rate, right?
Right.
Okay. If you were hired, you know, June 30th, presumably you were still hired at market rate. What the challenge is, if you're hired, you know, earlier in the year, where are you as far as market rate goes? Well, you know, from my perspective would be, you know, at 6 months, well, that's potentially could be 18 months, maybe 24 months before that individual might get a rate. And, you know, hiring mentality and where people are might not be at market rate. But if you're hired 40 days or 4 months or 3 months beforehand, and we then implement a raise, right, then you would get that raise at that
point. So you have to be on board 4 months before you're eligible for a raise.
Correct.
Okay. So employees are not eligible for a general county pay raise until they have been on board for at least 4 months.
Yeah, basically what I thought I was saying.
That's what I always thought I was saying.
So I don't, you know.
So in that case, I would almost go with the 2 months that Louisa does.
Now I understand what you're saying was complicated to manage it the other way around.
Yeah.
Well, I still thought it like them. That says the other way around.
Let's use Jessica as an example. She started in February. Her probation period is 6 months. She doesn't come off probation until August, although we're probably going to extend it because you know how she is. We'll do 6 months. But that means that she normally would not be eligible for the July 1st COLA. With this new one, with your 4 months, she will have completed 4 months of active duty.
Yeah.
And therefore, the raise happened after her 4 months, and she would be eligible,
right,
even though she wasn't on probation. Okay, that's my understanding of what you're saying.
No, you just said she was hired in February. Right. So between February and July 1st, she's well within that 4 months, so she would be eligible for the raise.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Certainly, she's not eligible for the raise.
Correct, because of the probation.
Right.
But your plan says she is eligible.
Yes, plan says she is eligible.
That's what I want to make sure of. Because that's what I interpret the white one on the screen. It says employees are not eligible for a general county pay raise until they've been on board for at least 4 months.
Prior to the raise.
He's saying prior to the raise. I wouldn't mind it if they got the raise after 4 months.
But that would be easier to...
That would be easier to administer.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, how often would we do a raise in August? I mean, that seems...
Cool. No.
You've done it in August, you've done it in September, you've done it in December, and you've done it in January since I've been here.
But but regardless, it applies to everybody, right?
Not unless they pay it 4 months of service.
What I'm saying is that whatever the effective date of the raise is, that's when whoever was eligible for it to begin with, right? So, I mean, it doesn't matter. Whenever we apply the raise, if you were hired within 4 months, or is what my intention was, if you were hired 4 months prior to that raise, you are eligible for the raise. That's what it really
is. So, let me put it in Navy terms. If you've been on board for 4 months before a raise goes into effect,
you're eligible for it.
Yeah. If you're hired prior to March 1st, you're eligible for the raise. If you're hired... Okay, so it's April.
April, May, June, July. No, March 1st.
March 1st. I was right. Yeah, if you're hired prior to March 1st, you get a raise. If you're hired from March 1st later, you don't get that raise.
Right. Right.
So employees are not eligible for a general county pay raise until they have been on board for at least 4 months prior to... That's just it. If they're not eligible until they've been on board 4 months, once they've been on 4 months, they're eligible for anything that comes.
Right, it's already there. Yeah.
I mean, we don't have to say that, you know.
But you're not keeping track of when, you know, they came on and then they were 4 months. It wasn't what you said was.
Whenever the raise
what you said was if they got hired July 1st and the raise was July 1st and they were on board for 4 months, then they would get the raise. That's not what I said. There was a difference.
Okay, got it.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's nothing retroactive about this. If someone comes on board March 1st, as you said,
yeah,
and the raise goes
out
April 1st,
they don't get it.
They don't get it.
Right.
Because they haven't completed 4 months.
It goes on July 1st. They don't get it. Or will they get it for the March 1st, but if they're March 2nd, they don't get it?
Yeah, if they come on board July 1st for that April raise, they don't get it either because they came after the raise. There's nothing. If there's a raise that occurs after you've been on board 4 months, you get it.
Yes. That's how I understand it.
Do I have four nods? Do I have staff nods? Does everybody get that?
Well, I mean, you got three nods. I still would like to do it the other way, but I will do.
But we just want to make it clear.
You got three nods that say 4 months.
Yeah. Okay. So the motion to clarify, the motion said employees are not eligible for general county pay raise or COLA increases until they have been on board for at least 4 months. Not understood to be not retroactive. It's happening. They have to be on board 4 months, and anything happens after that, they get it. And it's a 3-to-1 vote.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Payne, is that okay?
Do we need to restate that? Do we just need to restate the motion?
Does everybody agree? Well,
the majority is in agreement.
It's 3-to-1 vote, been so far.
Well, the vote's already been there. It's fair enough. The discussion.
Well, I don't know where. I thought you had against
the
motion. Yeah, I don't think we changed the language of the motion.
No, I don't think so either. And I think the answer to it is Mr. O'Brien's original motion stands. And the interpretation is as Mr.
Okay. So then the only thing would be whether Mr. Sheridan is changing his vote or not.
Well, no,
Mr.
I can't.
Sheridan doesn't get a vote on it. It's a matter of interpretation. And the interpretation by a majority of the board.
I think technically he's allowed to change it. If
well, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't even beat a dead horse.
So we have a decision on the white plan 4 months.
4 months.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all.
New business, any? All righty. Hearing none, I will now open the, second round of public comments. Anyone wish to address the board should come to the podium at this time. Please state your name and address. Please keep your comments directed to the board. Is there anyone wish to speak to the board at this time? Thought Mr. Nichols was coming up to speak.
Mr. Chair, I move the floor.
Seeing none, I will now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Chair, I move the Flanagan County Board of Supervisors move into a closed session pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A7 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, investment of funds, and litigation.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
Ladies and gentlemen, be in the Morris Room, please.
Morris Room.
Onward.
I'm glad we got more snacks because I have plowed through my snacks on this table. You can tell I didn't go to eat dinner.
Teeing up that Galaxy Note. All right.
Still recording, huh?
We ready? Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only two such public business matters were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien? Aye. Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Do we have a motion to adjourn? Motion to extend? Yeah, we're after.
Till?
12 o'clock. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion to adjourn.
Closed. Chair votes aye. Motion to adjourn by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. 4-0-1.
Thank you.
We're right on 11. Hey, we're right. We were actually in time. You were saying, I was looking over at you. I was like, dude, still 11. We're okay.